Good evening, everyone. We're 24 hours closer to the second coming. Exciting time to be alive. Now, the Bible is very clear, and tonight we're going to talk about the signs of the second coming. You are likely very much aware that there are two elements, as I mentioned last night, that let us know where we are in time. The first one is the great prophetic timeline that we examined last night. And the second one are the signs of the second coming that we will look at tonight. So we're going to read, first of all, a statement from Acts of the Apostles, page 260, which says, "There are in the world today many who close their eyes to the evidences that Christ has given to warn men of his coming. They seek to quiet all apprehension, while at the same time the signs of the end are rapidly fulfilling. And the world is hastening to the time when the Son of Man shall be revealed in the clouds of heaven." So though most people are, as we talked about last night, deluded, distracted, and so on, and occupied and busy, signs are happening. As a matter of fact, signs are happening so much today that for young people, it just seems like normal life. You understand? It's hardly even to them a sign. So we're going to look at some of them. And I actually had a sermon that I did several years ago called The Seven Unmistakable Signs of the End. And they were unmistakable signs of the end. But this year, my sermon is brand new, and it's seven completely different ones. One of them, the last one is the same. How many signs do you think I'm going to tell you about tonight? Seven. That's right. So what we're going to do, if you take notes, you're going to get to seven, and that's going to be the last one. But it's very interesting. And the one that you probably would not expect is the signs in the sun, the moon, and the stars. You are likely aware that Matthew 24 and verse 29 says, "Immediately after the tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened," and so on. All of these things would happen. So I'm going to tell you, we'll look at just two interesting quotations from Desire of Ages. And this is page 632. "At the close of the great papal persecution," when did that end? 1798. You also had the Inquisition, you know, going on a little bit beyond that. But Christ declared the sun should be darkened, the moon would not give her light, next the stars would fall from heaven, and he says, "Learn a parable of the fig tree. When his branch is yet tender and puts forth leaves, you know that summer is near. So likewise, when you see all these things, know that it is near, even at the doors." Now, the interesting part about that is we've only read about this in a book. The falling of the stars, and of course, following the great dark day when the moon was turned to blood and so on. Most of us have only read about that. It is very likely that no one here was alive at that time. The point, though, is very clear. They did happen on time. Now, I happen to be a person that believes that God may indeed do those again. I don't know. But he would not have to, because they have already been done. Luke 21, Mark 13, Revelation 6, and of course Matthew 24 talked about signs in the heavens. Most of you have read about it. If you haven't, you can just get on the internet and Google Lisbon earthquake. It was likely the greatest earthquake that was ever to occur on the earth to the present day. November 1, 1755, just as that great time of trouble was ending. The dark day, May 19, 1780. The falling of the stars, November 13, 1833. And you can read more about that in chapters 17 and 18 of The Great Controversy, which the chapters are "These Signs Fulfilled." So you'll be able to see that. I'm only telling you about this one because it is history. It has already happened. The second one is false prophets as a sign of the end. Many of you know that Matthew 24, and I'm going to get very specific in these tonight. Matthew 24, Jesus warns about false prophets. Four times in that one chapter alone, he says, "Beware, be watchful of false prophets." And then he says, "If possible, they will deceive the very elect." That's the camp meeting crowd, isn't it? I mean, if you guys take time off of work and take vacation time to come to camp meeting, who else could be the elect? The devil would like to deceive you as well. This is very important stuff that I'm telling you about here. There was this guy a couple of years ago who claimed that he was the Christ returned. And as typically is the case, there are many people who follow after people like this. Another one, Elizabeth Barron, an internationally known psychic medium, has channeled St. Catherine once a month since 1986 to share St. Catherine's insights on national and worldly issues. But a false prophet, listen carefully, is anyone who claims to speak for God but does not teach and practice the truth. Does everybody understand that? This is important. Now, Revelation 16, 13, and 14, we're told in the book of Revelation that something interesting would happen. Three unclean spirits, like frogs, would come out of the mouth of the beast, the dragon, and the false prophet. What do we think of when we think of the beast, the dragon, and the false prophet? You think of papacy, you think of heathenism, and apostate Protestantism. Isn't that true? That's very amazing. Now listen carefully, because I'm going to ask you a question that you should think about. Would it be appropriate for us to study in prayer meeting the works of an apostate Protestant? You just think about it, and you understand what's going on in the world today, and that will be helpful for you enough. We're going to go really, really fast, because this one will take a long time. The third sign is signs in the prophetic and spiritual world. Now, I noted that when the introductions were made tonight, some people are newly involved with Adventist Church, and there are some people here for a camp meeting for their first time, and it is very likely in a group this size that we have a number of guests. That being the case, I'm going to give you just about a three-minute prophecy study, because it is only significant what I'm going to show you in the next few minutes if you understand prophecy. So Daniel 2, we don't need to turn there because most of us are very familiar with it. If you're not, take notes. Daniel chapter 2 is an interesting and very amazing chapter where a heathen king named Nebuchadnezzar is given a dream at night. And it is so amazing to him that he wakes up and cannot go back to sleep. So he called his wise guys, the counselors, the wise men, in, and he asked them, "I've dreamed this dream and I want to know what it means." You guys know this story. They said, "Nobody can read your mind. You know, it's really, really amazing. But if you tell us, then we'll tell you." "No, I want you to tell me." I can tell you how we know that nobody can read someone else's mind. Kathy, my wife, who travels with me everywhere now, this is interesting what I'm going to tell you. We just shared our 42nd anniversary. So we've bonded like two peas in a pod. But I'll sometimes tell her, "I'll bet you never guessed what I dreamed last night." She never has one time guessed it. And, you know, who else would better know? Do you understand? You can't get in somebody's head and figure out what they dreamed unless God is with you. And Daniel the prophet, the man of God, as a young man, was called in because he was first notified because they were about to kill him. And he said, "Don't be hasty, let me ask my God and we'll see." So he was able to not only tell the dream, well, the king what he dreamed, but also the interpretation. And the king dreamed about this great big image, you remember. I showed you a picture of him earlier this week. And he is a head of gold and a breast and thighs, you know, arms and breast of silver, and then the brass and the iron and so on. Well, those things represent, and please listen carefully, the four major world empires, Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, and Rome, that have affected God's people over the time, you know, of salvation history, if you please. By the way, this is not an Adventist interpretation alone. Early church leaders like Irenaeus, like 325 AD, when they wrote about Daniel 2, they said the big image represents Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, and Rome. Is everybody clear about that? Now listen carefully. If you can imagine this, I am old enough to have not used PowerPoint. When I first started speaking in public, we used, if we had any help in seminars, something called overhead transparencies. Anybody remember those things? Well, if you put one on this overhead machine, then you flip on the light and it would reflect out and go up on the screen if the light was bright enough and you could see it. Well, just pretend like you could put Daniel 2 down there. Daniel 2 is the foundation and kind of the pattern of everything else that follows. So Daniel 7, instead of having four metals, has four beasts. So we're going to go there right now. That's all I'm going to read from Daniel 7. I just want you to see something very interesting. Daniel 7, and this one, remember, the king had the first dream. Here God is giving essentially the same dream to the prophet. And here he says, in the first year, this is Daniel 7, verse 1, the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream and visions of his head while on his bed.